What's happening, everybody? Now tuning into the Producers Corner with Spud Too Tight. Man, I got another hot show for you today. On the phone with me, I have a very talented music producer who has produced some of the biggest names in the music industry, like Beyonce, Busta Rhymes, Christina Aguilera, and Dr. Dre. Please put your hands together and welcome super music producer and songwriter, Focus. What's happening, Focus?
How you doing?
Oh, man, it's all good, man. I'm doing real good.
good.
Well, man, first off, man, I just want to thank you, man, for, you know, taking your time out, coming on the show, man, and sharing your expertise and knowledge, man. You've been a busy guy, man, in the industry, man. You got a huge buzz going on, man. So I definitely wanted to, you know, take my time out and talk to you, see what you're on, man, and, you know, get your perspective and your experiences from the music production side, man. So, again, thanks a lot, dude.
No, I appreciate it. Thank you.
Man, for a lot of people that's listening, Focus, give me some background of how when you started in the music industry and how you've evolved into this huge music producer. Man, you got a lot of success, man. Some heavy hitters that you produce, dude. That's just phenomenal.
Yeah, it's a blessing, man. And I really don't look at myself as, you know, they like to call me a super producer or you know, like being big and all that. Like, I just really love making music. And I've been blessed to... my father was in the industry prior to me, Bernard Edwards from Chic, the bass player from Chic. So music has been in my life, all of my life. So it pretty much was, it's not even a graduation from something to another thing. It's just all I knew ever since I was a little boy. So when I finally got to work with the people, I really just put in my grind to get myself at the caliber to where I could be able to work with the big names. And it's been an honor. It's still, like, even to this day, I've been in the industry for over 20 years, but to this day, I'm still learning. You know what I'm saying? I'm still growing, and I'm still you know, trying to reinvent myself.
I agree, man. You and I, man, we kind of share the same insight on that, man. I consider myself, you know, doing it 20 years also, man, a student of music, man. And, you know, like you say, it's just a constant evolve, man, of learning and just developing yourself into a better, more seasoned musician and producer. You know, it's just an ongoing process, man. So I hear you.
Yes, sir.
Man, you're now producing, you're songwriting, but... Recently, man, you're releasing your new CD on the Avant Garde Project, man. Give me some details of how you merged from a producer to an artist now.
Well, actually, the funny thing about it is, and a lot of people are just finding this out, that I really started off as a artist producer. When I was signed to Scotty Brothers, I had a single out, and they had me as a rapper, producer, you know, producing my own tracks and stuff. But at heart, I've always been a producer, and unfortunately, everybody has me pigeonholed as a hip-hop producer, and they don't know everything I can do, and they don't know the kind of music I've been around and the genres that I do hold dear to heart and near to my soul. So I turned around and I started working on some different kind of sound and stuff and different kinds of music. And I wrote the song and I sang the song and I demoed the song and I started showing it to my brother and showing it to the people that I work with at AFAM. And it just became a project. Like, it was less than 3 months. It just became a project. Like, it wasn't something that I sought to do. It's just something that happened and then I rolled with it, you know?
Is there a specific genre when you created this album, or is it just like a lot of musical ideas that you just kind of summed into one volume of music?
Exactly. It's just that. It's what I felt like doing to put it on this album. And somehow in this album, it all makes sense if you take it for what it's worth. It's just music. I'm not trying to make an alternative album. I wasn't trying to make a rock album. I wasn't trying to make an R&B or a rap album. I just made an album. I just made something that I enjoyed doing, and I really hope that people can understand it.
You know what's hot, man? You know, I always found out, you know, as a producer, you know, a lot of times the public eye doesn't see the other talents as a producer other than the work that we display and that we release, you know, from other artists. And sometimes they can lose the musical side of us, because a lot of producers out there like me and you, man, we're musicians also, you know, so we don't get a chance to really express ourselves musically when we're working on an artist, you know. So, you know, coming up with your own project, man, so you can really display what it is you do as a musician, I think that's really important, you know, in your career.
Yeah, and if you really look at most of the great producers, they've always had one of those albums where they just did their own thing. It might not have been a winning album. It might have been a winning album, but you never know until you try. And I just got fed up with doing what everybody expected me to do or doing what was on the radio or trying to cater to something. I just wanted to make music. I just wanted to groove, you know what I'm saying? To just go in and do something for myself and see if they accept it.
Oh, that's what's hot, man. Keeping them options open. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Yes, sir.
Now, when did you discover your talents to play keyboards and songwriting focus? I mean, I know you dated back 20 years, man, but I felt that, man, in my younger years. I started playing, you know, when I was a younger child, but I really didn't start tracking or recording until I was about 14 or 15, really making my own compositions, man. When did you transition to discover those talents?
It's really funny because I started making, like, my first kind of cutesy little songs when I was 8. My dad had a Fostex 4-track, and I used to go sneak into his den and take that and go make my songs. And, you know, even before that, I used to do the tape deck to tape deck using the pause button type thing. So, you know what I'm saying?
The manual multi-track recording.
Of course. And it always was something that was a desire and something that I really wanted to get into. As far as my playing is concerned, I used to play, my dad got us all piano lessons when we were younger. So, you know, I had lessons for 2 years in piano, and I had a drum lessons at school. So it was stuff that I was learning, but then I was just one of those cats that was just really driven by music. And instead of me just going on with my lessons and being evil at one of them instruments and just being crazy with it, I wanted to learn everything right now, and I didn't care. Just as long as I could do what I needed to do, you know what I'm saying? So
right.
I just started picking up the guitar and playing by ear, picking up the bass and watching my dad's fingers, playing the drums at school and playing keys, you know what I'm saying? So all of that stuff is just, that's all I can really do. I can do what I need to do, but I'm not, like, you won't see me live singing and playing on a piano. I'm just not there yet. You know what I'm saying?
Right. But, you know, I think there's a time and place. I think everybody kind of recognizes early on and when you're first starting to play, you know, what your strengths and weaknesses are going to be. Not so much weaknesses, but I just feel that you definitely want to display all of your talents at 100%, you know, especially with, you know, introducing them to the public. So, no, I mean, that's what time it is, you know, identifying what you can do at 100% at all times. I definitely agree with you there. You know, since you've been tracking, man, for 20 years, I want to talk to you a little bit about analog and DAW formats, the pros and cons, and, you know, what you're currently using today and your configuration, your setup right now, what you have in your studio.
Sure. As far as analog and digital, it took a village to pull teeth for me to change from, you know, D88 into the digital world. And even though that was digital tape, it was still more analog than Pro Tools.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So, I was really one of them diehards. If I had a 2-inch reel, I'd probably still be cutting on it. I love the warmth. I love the fact I'm really an old school cat. I love the fact I can dial in. I love the fact I can get what I need to get, and what I put on there is going to stay there. You know what I'm saying? I'm really one of those cats that I love to have my hands on it. It's almost like clay, and once you mold it and you put the right touch and the right imprint on it, it stays there.
Oh, yeah.
And with digital, I find a lot of times digital is a great thing, and it's a lot quicker. But I find a lot of times that warmth, you have to do so much to acquire that warmth that it almost becomes more of a job than what it used to be.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Getting a good single channel with, man, some good Mike Pries to, you know, give, you know, some
color. Like, exactly. Like, just to get the color. Exactly. Like, you got to, instead of just doing, you know, 5 colors to make black, you got to damn near use every color just to make black.
Right.
When you're painting in digital. And it's like, a lot of people are like, nah, it's not true. They got tube compressors and this and that, but it's still plugging. It's not like it used to be. When you put a kick on an analog 2-inch or even a cassette, the funny thing about it is it hits harder.
It does. You got more headroom. To me, I
think.
You know, yeah, the digital world, man, it just caps out. I mean, I run Logic Pro, and I've been running Logic Pro for years, and I've used Pro Tools, Cubase. I mean, the list just goes on. But I'm comfortable within Logic, but I definitely have to agree with you that even though Logic gives me a better signal, a hotter signal than some of the other DAW system. It just doesn't have that warmth and you know, those harmonic distortions I would get out of my analog recording days, you know. So I definitely agree with you.
Yeah, and even taking it a step further, like you were talking about, you're in Logic. Everybody's been trying to switch me over to Logic, and I'm really just a pig-headed old school cat. Like, I just got into Pro Tools. I got it to where it's doing what I needed to do, and it's making sense, and I'm understanding my rig. I have the Pro Tools HD setup, and I'm loving that now. And I'm not willing to turn around and try to do another learning curve. And, you know, these kids can whip around in anything, and it's nothing to them, and it's something to me because I got to learn it.
Right.
And I'm, you know, I want to just remain creative, you know.
You know, but I got to say, man, I mean, Logic Pro for me, and being that keyboardist that I'm doing all keyboards, the templates that I can create for you would be an easy workflow for you to set up. And what I like about Logic is the way I'm hosting my VSTs, because I'm totally virtualist now, you know what I mean? It's just, it sounds better in Logic than it does in Pro Tools. I don't know why, but it just does. But, you know, if you were to make that transition, it would be a very small learning curve, and I know you would be a happy camper going forward. So if you definitely want to holler, man, I can definitely get you up and going.
Well, I will definitely, I'm going to hold you to that, because everybody's trying to get me on it, so I definitely will hold you to that.
As a keyboardist, it's a must, in my opinion.
Okay. That's my boy, Steve, said the same thing. He said the same thing to me.
You know, as a keyboardist focus, man, you use a lot of hardware keyboards, and, you know, with the software synths that are out there and a lot of the romplers and the sample libraries, are you using one or the other, or kind of like a mixture of both in your rig?
Well, honestly, I've been doing a mixture of both. Like, I've really have downsized my rig, because I used to have almost 9 keyboards and Pro Tools and Reason and Machine, and you know what I'm saying? So it was just overkill. So I've been talking to a lot of these cats with the virtual stuff, and I'm really trying to get into it. And I'm also looking to give a home to my drum sounds, because a lot of the producers that I run across are so intrigued by my drum sounds. So me and my engineer, Oscar, we started making CDs of just the drums with the EQs we've been using them on and stuff like that. And I've acquired enough to where I can make a nice little sound bank for whoever steps up, you know. And I'm really trying to get and embrace that digital world. It's a little hard for me, though, man. It's still a little hard for me.
You know what it is, I think? Are you using like an MPC for your triggering your sounds? Or are you using
That's exactly it. For me to let go of my MPC 3000, as faithful and intricate as it's been to my workstation, like, I just can't see myself without it. And everybody's like, well, you can get a MPC or MPD or whatever it is that you can just trigger the stuff out of your computer, but it's just, there's nothing that feels like a 3000 to me.
Right. You know, as far as hosting, though, man, I think, you know, we would probably have to use some sort of controller, you know, because you like the pad feel out of it. You know, you just want to be able to trigger, you know, but the be able to access all of your, like, all of my drum libraries are running through my ESX24, and I have everything individually routed on its own virtual audio channel. So, and that's the entire library. So I have access. I don't have to do any loading. I don't have to, you know, dig through my sounds. It's right there for me on all of my keys, and they're totally editable, tunable. And you can assign it to any output that you want it. But I totally understand what the feel is. Like, a lot of guys don't like triggering their drums from the keyboards. You know, their actual keyboards.
No, I don't. I'm not a fan of that. And I'm not a fan of, well, I like the filters in the MP3 also.
Right.
When it comes down to the MPC 3000, it still has that. It's the closest thing to having that SP12 crack on a snare, that analog on the kick. Like, it, once you sample it, everybody's asking me what that I put on it and this and that, and most of the time I just sample it raw and it sounds great.
Yeah, the color is definitely different. You're going to lack the color on the up, unless you're going to run it through like an external pre then back into your sound card. So yeah, I definitely hear you there, man. You know, there's just so many options nowadays, and, you know, I just like to talk to everybody, fun with their run. It's like, dude, there's really not a right or wrong way. It's just really a matter of how you work in the studio and how fast you work, and, you know, having those sounds accessible to you. But man, you know, with your compositions that you've produced, you know, with Beyonce, Busta Rhymes, Dr. Dre, man, the list just goes on. Give me some of your methods of putting a song together for yourself or an artist that you're producing currently or in the future.
When it comes down to it, I really still believe in vibe, old school vibe. When it comes down to meeting somebody and feeling their energy and seeing what they're into and putting their characteristics into a track. And it's been really, like I said, it's been a blessing that, you know, working with a Busta Rhymes and you know, being around him and feeling his energy and feeling the way he likes to work and seeing how amped up he gets when he gets that idea, once he starts to paint the picture and he starts to film the movie. You know what I'm saying? Because he doesn't just cut a record. He films a movie. It's so much to it. And it's like when you make that connection with an artist like Bus, when you make that connection with an artist like Beyonce or Christina Aguilera, you get to the point where you thrive off of that. Like, I can't just walk into a studio with a cat that I don't know and a bunch of people I don't know and expect to have that same energy. I'm not that guy. Right. I can make tracks at my home and send it to them. But when it comes down to working with an artist, I'd like to get to know him. I'd like to bust a couple jokes and laugh and maybe have a drink and see what it is. And if we don't like each other, then it's going to come through on the music. You will hear it.
Oh, yeah, definitely. You know what I'm saying? No doubt, man. You know, I talk a lot about the artist and producer relationship because I haven't seen a lot of the relationships like I did back in the 80s and 70s, you know, where there's where selected artists are really working with a writing camp, man. They did on pretty much all their albums. You know, I understand everyone has a different flavor nowadays, but like you said, that lack of relationship and really knowing what that artist or producer can do in the studio because of time and, you know, schedules. I know that's really hard to take the time out and spend weeks and months, you know, but it can be done within the actual writing process, I believe.
Well, can we be honest, and I'm going to be very honest, all of that crap about, you know, people throwing out their schedules and stuff like that, if you are really looking to make a hit, if you're really looking to make a statement, if you're really looking to be more than just a cat that's surviving for one record, you're going to make the damn time, period.
Right, exactly.
You know what I'm saying? And when it comes down to it, if Britney Spears had her choice to work with a new producer in the studio or go work with Max Martin or somebody that she's probably worked with before, she's going to go with Max Martin. She's going to go with those other people. But you never know what a new producer could bring out of you.
Right.
You never know what that, you know what I'm saying? And nobody's even giving it a chance anymore. They just send me the record. I'm going to have some writers write on it. And we're going to do this and do that, blah, blah, blah. There's no vibe in it. There's no soul in the record.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? The record hits the net and you're sending it all around. The record has no soul. There's no basis to it. It's just what you did, what they did, and what the artist does.
I totally agree, man. Another thing that I talk about a lot is I write around pre-existing vocals when I'm tracking with anybody that I'm producing, because, you know, I can give you a track and it's going to be cool, but is it really fitting your style and your deliverance as an artist? You know, it's not. It doesn't have that artist signature that I think every artist should have to be able to identify it from a fan's point of view. So, you know, I'll track it, and then when they leave, man, I strip all the music down, and then I really start basing my compositions around the harmonies, the vocals that I hear, the rhythm changes, just the whole song changes, because then I can really vibe off the artist. And if they want to relay those vocals, man, that just makes you even better, because you hear differently that there's a new movement in the song, you know. So
right,
you know, with your experience, Focus, I think that every producer has a zone that they find and they're most creative in. Do you find that being on stage, or do you find the studio environment a little bit more structured where you can take time with their compositions?
I honestly am a studio head. I don't have the love to be on stage. That's why I wasn't an artist in the first place. That's why I didn't strive to be an artist, I should say, in the first place. I did it, but all that being in the limelight and have to maintain yourself and have to make sure you have the six-pack and you're on everybody's party list and you're in the camera, and I'm not that guy. I like making music. I love making music. So the whole thing with me was making music. Put me in an environment where I can make music. And the studio is where I eat, sleep, breathe, and wake up in the morning. I love it.
Right. No, I definitely agree with you, man. You know, it's the focus. You know, I play live for 20 years. I was, you know, main keyboardist and music director for my church, and, you know, we've traveled around and traveled different things, and I've also played as the main keyboardist for a lot of artists I produce, and we did some live shows. But again, for me, that studio environment, man, is where I can take my time and really develop and better myself as a producer and also as a musician, you know, because I never stop practicing as a board. You know, so yeah, exactly. So you know, having that time to really focus on what it is I'm zoning in on gives me that opportunity to make myself better as a musician and producer. So I agree with you there.
Thank you. Yeah.
So, man, what would you define your sonic signature as a producer and a songwriter? I mean, I know you're not a gimmicky type of producer. I mean, you definitely make some high compositions, but I feel that everybody has some sort of signature that I can identify a focus type of track. What do you think those elements are?
I go after hard-hitting drums. Everybody tries to tell me it's my chords, but I know for a fact that what I really coin as my signature thing in my compositions is my drums. If I can't feel that knock, whatever is going to make my head bob a certain way, then I don't even want to, you know, pursue the track. Like, I won't even finish it. It has to have a great foundation. And to me, the whole, you know, the drums and the bass and the way that stuff just lays in, you know, you can put a bunch of chords out there with nothing on it. Kanye has proven that with the 808 and Heartbreaks, you know, the whole Eurythmics, all of that stuff. They didn't really have really big drum structures, and they've shown that chords can live by themselves.
Right.
But, you know, with me, I really live with them drums. I have to make sure that they sonically are perfect.
Yes, drum, me too, man. I mean, I really started getting into my rhythm tracking and mixing, man. And, you know, I talk about this guy a lot, man. He's just a phenomenal producer, man. He's a heavy influence of mine. That's Teddy Riley, man. He's really the guy that just set the foundation for me as a producer, musician, arranger, composer. And his drum library and his drums are just beating through those speakers, man, in every mix that he does, you know. So it's like, man, you really got to step your game up as a producer, and you, especially when you're tracking R&B and hip-hop, man. Those drums got to slam hard, you know, using the right compressors and release. And you don't want to, you know, squash the sound and kicks and snares too much, because I hear a lot of times it's mixed like, man, it's compressed too much, it's not really hitting, you know.
Right, exactly. But another thing with Teddy, and just to expand on Teddy, like, we used to hear stories about him and just sit there with our mouth open and our eyes wide open, like how many NPCs he would have going at the same time with just for a snare, you know, just for the kicks and stuff like that, how many times he would layer something and get the sound he got. And Teddy really had a great hip-hop basis because of the New Jack Swing that he did. And, you know, it was way before he started doing the R&B side of New Jack Swing, you know? So he knew that, you know, that foundation, that drum, it gets everybody crazy, and then he built on top of that.
Exactly. And then you hear a lot of guys, man, really start chopping up his samples and kicks and snares just to have it in their tracks. You know what I mean? It's like, dude, his claps and snare combination, the kicks are just off the meters.
Amazing.
It's nothing's duplicated with his sound. Yeah, man.
There it is.
So what do you have on the musical agenda for 2010, man? I mean, who have you produced? Who's on the radar? And what's next for Focus?
Right now, I am in the process of submitting to everybody. What's in the future for me, I really would love to have a great place where I can go and develop artists. So AFAM has been the imprint that I've been building. I have two great artists by the name of Keita. He's a rapper from Inglewood, California, and Al Gator, who's a rapper from College Park, Georgia. And Atlanta might as well be. And I've been really building them and building their buzz and bringing them out of that hole just being a rapper and bringing them into being an entertainer. We're looking for currently pop artists. We're looking for a rock band. And I really just want to start to develop stuff like that and develop new sounds and deal with people that can trust me like that. As far as new projects that I'll be on, I'll be on Bionic with Christina Aguilera, which is a blessing. I'll be on Busta Rhymes' new one, which is a blessing. I'm working with Dr. Dre on Detox. And just basically whoever comes my way, I'm definitely working with. Exhibit. I'm trying to get on the new Slaughterhouse because I was on the first album. So I'm just really just putting records out there.
Man, that's phenomenal, man. That's what's up. Well, Focus, man, has been the best day, man, talking to you, chopping it up with you, man, hearing that experience and, you know, getting the different sides of production, you know, different formats, because you're one of the guys that really, you know, are using an analog with a mixture of DAW, you know what I mean? And, you're leaning a lot of the analog side like I do, you know, but we're using the DAW systems for edits and, you know, having that different views and things, man, just really helps the listeners, man, you know, really make a choice and try some new things that are really out in their own production rig. So I appreciate you coming by, man. You definitely got a spot here at the Producer's Corner, man. I would love to have you back and talk about your new endeavors, man.
Anytime. Thank you so much, man. I really appreciate that.
Oh, yeah, man. Let's stay in touch, man. If you want to move to Logic, man, hit me up.
Done deal. I will.
All right. Talk to you soon, man.
All right.
Take it easy. All right. And a big shout out to Focus, man, for coming on the show and chopping it up with me. You know, it's a real honor for me to talk to Focus, man. He's produced a lot of artists, man, you know, ranging from Beyonce to Busta Rhymes, Christina Aguilera, Dr. Dre, Joe, Pink, Slaughterhouse, The Game. I mean, the list just goes on and on and on. You know, but another thing, too, is just he's not boxing himself into specific equipment. I mean, he has a format and a foundation that he's working off of, but he's not using XYZ equipment because XYZ producer or musician is using that. I mean, he's really going off of his style and workflow in the studio and really designed it, and it's just been working for him, obviously. So again, big shout out to Focus, man. For my past and current interviews, you can hit my website up at www.sput2typemusic.ning.com. And I'm also available on iTunes as a podcast, so if you have an iPhone or an iTunes player on your computer, go to the iTunes store, type in the Producer's Corner with Sput2Tight, and click on my image, and it will give you a list of all my past and current interviews. And for questions and suggestions, you can hit my email up at sput2tight@gmail.com. And I want to thank everybody for listening in and joining in. And until next time, you guys keep it tight. Peace.